Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Let us go to Belfast. Let's go to City Hall in Belfast, and let's go to Lord Mayor of Belfast, Máirtín Ó-Maolaodha. And Lord Mayor, you're very welcome to the program.
Adrian, thank you. It's always great to speak to the Irish Radio Network, and I suppose this is my last conversation as the Lord Mayor of Belfast, but it's been fun, and it's been fun speaking to you on several occasions over the year to talk about the good work that's going on.
Yeah, it is, maybe some of our listeners may not realize the significance of having a Lord Mayor of the Sinn Féin party to be followed by a Lord Mayor of the SDLP party. Historic changes over the years. If we go back as little as 10 or 12 years ago and say, by the way, there's going to be a Sinn Féin Lord Mayor and an SDLP, I don't think anybody would have given that much credence.
Well, and we need to be circumspect, I suppose, when we talk about the changes in Belfast, because we want to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past and we have an alienated minority. But the fact is that in the four-year council term, the three of those years now have a nationalist mayor, two Sinn Féin, one SDLP, and one unionist. And, that's a change. We've had mayors and Lord Mayors in Belfast for 400 years, and really for 385 of those years it was just one section of the city. So I suppose our challenge is, while we of course welcome these changes and worked hard for them, that we make sure that the healing process and reconciliation process in the city continues, and that I suppose we get to the stage where the mayors are elected because of their progressive politics, because of their wish to build up the city.
Martin, not because I say so, but every indication would be that you have raised the bar for whoever your successor may be, because you accomplished a lot in the last year, as many of us would know. But it was also, as you say, an exciting time to be in that slot. Who would have thought, among other things, that during your reign as mayor, that actually you would meet with Queen Elizabeth at Windsor Castle during the Irish presidential visit there a couple of weeks back? Historic.
Well, it's been an exciting year, and a great privilege to serve the city of Belfast, to be at the helm of the city during such an exciting year. And we managed to, I suppose, score a number of firsts, but only because the people of the city wanted positive change. I had a very good predecessor from the DUP, Gavin Robinson, and he set the bar very high as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to do as a gesture of reconciliation with the unionist people of Belfast was to get an opportunity to meet with someone from the British Royals, because while my tradition, Adrian, isn't really overly enamoured, if you wish, of the idea of monarchy, it is a fact that the unionists of Belfast revere the monarchy, are great royalists, and I think to show respect for unionism, I did want to find an opportunity during the year to become the first Lord Mayor from the Sinn Féin tradition to meet a member of the royal family. And as it turned out, our wonderful president, Michael D. Higgins, perhaps one of the greatest leaders the country has ever had, was undertaking a state visit, and it was really very kind and generous of the president that he invited me and the Lord Mayor of Dublin to accompany him together.
Right.
And that as part of that, we met the Queen in Windsor Castle. These are good, positive, transformational moments, and I enjoyed the visit, and I hope it adds to the healing process. Now that war is over, Adrian, I hope it adds to the healing process in the city of Belfast.
Yes. We could throw caution to the wind and talk about the significance of going to the past and analyzing the past. But today, this very day, being the 40th anniversary of one of the most atrocious acts in the Troubles of Northern Ireland, the bombings of Dublin and Monaghan took place 40 years ago today. You were in the short pants back then. But what's your own reflection on that, and how that would affect the course of history as you look back?
Well, you know, I actually remember it well. I was 14 in Belfast. It was a turbulent, dark year for the city and for the island. I met this week with the two survivors of the Miami Showband attack, Des McAleer and Stephen Travers, and of course they were victims of the same gang which was involved in the Monaghan and Dublin bombings. And we know now from the admissions of the British government that those involved in those attacks were agents of the British government and were working with undercover forces and the special branch of the RUC and so on. So I think it's a very bloody chapter in our history, very heartbreaking period for our people. There was a terrible injustice heaped upon injustice, and that the victims of the Monaghan and Dublin bombings were forgotten about, that they didn't receive, I think, the type of neither compensation nor attention nor care nor love that they were entitled to from the Irish government, and that compounded their hurt. I think that's being put right now.
Just to give to fill in our listeners here who may not know about the lunacy of, again, the murders of a show band, a very popular show band in Ireland, the Miami Show Band, who for no reason whatsoever other than to promote the lunacy of violence, were shot dead coming from a gig, in Northern Ireland. Just give us a brief synopsis.
It was 1975. They were, I suppose, the greatest band of their era in Ireland. They were the number one band in Ireland. They were attacked by a force of UDR and UVF members. Some of the UDR members lost their lives in the explosion. They tried to plant a bomb in the van of the Miami Show Band to try and paint them as some type of IRA supporters.
Right.
And the bomb went off, killed the members of the gang, which included the UDR. And, it became, I suppose, a night when the music died. And really another bloody turning point for us. And, when I met Stephen Travers this week, and the Glen Ann gang, as they called them, were involved in Dublin and Monaghan, and also were involved in the murders of the Miami Show Band. On his way to Belfast, he called in to see a survivor of the King's Mill massacre, and that was a terrible atrocity carried out by Republicans where Protestant workmen were shot dead. So there's, at the time, when we look back at, and you said it there, the terrible lunacy of war, but certainly the horror of war, and our conviction that we shouldn't go back there. And when the Miami Show Band talk, interestingly, they're not looking for convictions, and, or they think that would never happen anyway, but they would like truth. And I see a lot of that also in the survivors of the Monaghan and Dublin bombings, that the truth itself becomes justice. Of course, people are entitled to a judicial avenue of recompense and to seek judicial justice. But more and more, I think we're all trying to find out how we deal with the past, and the good intervention of Richard Haass and Megan O'Sullivan last year, where they said, okay, here's a set of proposals that finally you can find a way to remember the past, remember all those who died, but also make peace with the past and build for the future.
Right. Well, in being selective, and I think that I think most people, regardless of whether they, whether they understand the politics of war and the troubles in Northern Ireland, would find it very difficult to, to analyze on one hand, why the message, you know, from Britain appears to be, you know, let's move on, and you know, and in no uncertain terms, refuse to investigate areas where there is definite proof that there was collusion with the troops and the British security forces in Northern Ireland, and then pretty much in the same week had, of course, the arrest of Gerry Adams. It's very difficult for anybody to understand why in Northern Ireland that has moved progressively to almost beyond belief, that there are factions still, you know, who see nothing wrong with being selective when it comes to investigations of the past.
Yes, and it's very distressing, and I know that of my many contacts in Irish American, friends in Irish America were alarmed at the arrest of Gerry Adams, and also, you know, really distressed the fact that the British government has said recently that when we look at the past, we shouldn't really concern ourselves overly about the victims of state violence, that we should really look more at the victims of the paramilitary groups or of the IRA or whatever. Yeah. And for me, and I think for most of us who want to really build the peace, we realize that there can't be a hierarchy of victims. You can't say this is a deserving victim, this is an undeserving victim. You know, if you want to really bind up the wounds of the nation, you have to have an even-handed approach in it. I have to say, you know, I think this would concern us, Adrian, because we have seen the British government being a partner for peace, you know,
right,
in the Good Friday Agreement and the work of
right,
Tony Blair in particular. And at the minute, there's an awful lot of obfuscation, foot dragging, bias towards one point of view over another. And I actually think that's very unhelpful. And one of the things we needed when Richard Haass came up with his proposals, the Irish government backed them, the American government backed them, the SDLP, Sinn Féin and the Lions, and we needed the unionist parties to come on board. We needed an encouragement,
yeah,
and a push, and instead of doing that, the British government said, no, we're not willing to sign up to this new set of rules and agreements on how to deal with the past and other thorny issues. So, you know, I would say to all those in Irish America, I don't get overly political, but it is a time for Irish America to sit up and take notice and to say to our friends in London and the British government, look, you need to be even-handed, you need to encourage justice, you need to cherish all the victims equally, and you really need to encourage the unionists to embrace the Haass proposals, because there is no other way forward. And
right,
surely we can't go on even living with these difficult issues of flags, parades in the past, and saying, well, you know, we're not going to try and have a compromise, and Haass is the compromise. So
yeah,
I appreciate and understand and your concern as well, and your listeners' concern.
But also, I think it does affect Irish America in particular, and indeed the people of goodwill in America who feel that, you know, that such progress has been made in Northern Ireland, that it is really a slap at America, which in no small way can, you know, take credit for being on board during the bad times, to again, you know, have entertained, you know, the again, a yet one final attempt to allow America not to influence one side or the other, but to actually come in and lay out proposals. I mean, and you know, I don't think anybody would assume that would turn out the way that it had been. That, oh yes, everything was rosy, but if we don't like the proposal, we'll just walk away from it, rather than, you know, and there was I think felt across America that sent a very mixed message. mixed message in the sense that if the peace process is ongoing with all of the anticipated warts and passage of time necessary to make the adjustments, that a flat-out denial of the hand of friendship. I mean, obviously, Haas doesn't have any axe to grind, nor does the American government. They came invited. It's not like they showed up on the doorstep. It sent a very, very poor message across America to say, you know, why are we in the middle of this if, in fact, decisions have been made, you know, by, again, hardliners who have obviously made their minds up that unless it goes their way, this is not going to, it doesn't suit us, so to hell with it.
Well, I think that tenor and tone, Adrian, and has to go back to the British government from right across Irish America, because, you know, the one thing that we need to say is the war is over. We're never going to go back to violence here. We're going to work like hell to make sure that this place never descends back into violence. But that's not to say we're going to let anyone give a slap in the face to the peace process. And no one is better at standing up to negative elements within the British government than Irish America. There would be no peace process without Irish America. So I have seen in recent weeks how agitated and annoyed are the Friends of Peace in Ireland have been with the behaviour of negative elements and the behaviour of the British government. And I'm convinced also that that has been channeled towards the British government, and it does have an impact and did have an impact over recent weeks.
And it also, not only in recent weeks, but I mean that has been consistent through the, you know, before and during and after the Good Friday Agreement. So it's, again, it is difficult to explain away, but...
Well, let's explain it, Adrian, because the two things I've said is this. The explanation is that there are people who are opposed to the peace process because it's giving justice to all. It's creating a situation where you can have a Sinn Féin Lord Mayor in Belfast. It's creating a situation where Gerry Kelly, former Longcash IRA member, Longcash escapee, can be a minister in government. There are people who have never made peace with that and who don't want the war to be over. So that is, in my view, is the explanation of it. There are some people who want to fight old battles and don't want. They want to live in an unequal, non-equal society. So that's the explanation. But I'll say this, Adrian, they will not win. They will not take away the fruits of the peace. They will not push it back to the situation which Irish America had to campaign against in the 80s, where people were discriminated against because of where they worship on a Sunday. And they will not stop this push towards a inclusive society where everyone is treated the same, where people can have their aspiration for United Ireland and work for that. And I'm convinced that will happen. It will be done solely through democratic and peaceful means. But we won't have a situation where bully boys or a cabal or negative elements can say that we won't have our peace and the fruits that go with it. And
right.
That is the message I think that Irish America, even in its anger and its frustration, needs to send out that they will not take this peace and its fruits from us.
Can I ask you about, again, if we talk about the 40th anniversary today of what looked like probably the darkest day in Ireland, because now it was no longer Northern Ireland, but the message was loud and clear. That there was, you know, every good reason to believe that spilling into Southern Ireland, it came with a very strong message, particularly when there was no warning, there was no anything. This was just a slap in the face of any kind of logic. It had to be intentional. There's no way that this happened by accident.
Well, and we know from the investigation since that the British government's agents, the British military and the RUC Special Branch, were behind the attacks. We know that they armed those involved in the attacks. We know that many of them were dual members of the British Army and of Loyalist paramilitary groups. We know that the intention was to force the Irish government into introducing draconian legislation, which would be aimed at Republicans and at the IRA. We know that all that succeeded, that they slaughtered innocent people, and as a result of that, they got the result they wanted, that there was more legislation introduced to clamp down on or to attack the IRA. So we know all that happened, and we know then the search, the families have been on for 40 years, especially the period where really they were just forgotten, that there was no care given them, no attention given them. And we know now that, you know, that they are receiving, I think, the due attention that was that they should have received at the time. And they also, I think, are getting closer to justice. We know that the British government is refusing to cooperate with the inquiry into the Dublin and Monaghan bombings, but we know that because they have so much to hide, that their fingerprints are all over this, that there was really, when we look at collusion and the different categories of collusion, this was collusion at large, that these were attacks carried out by people in many cases actually were British military soldiers, British military operatives.
That is, let us hope that, you know, that it won't go to 41 years and that it won't go to, you know, into oblivion, into a limbo, which one would have to say it has sat now for four decades. Is there any sign? Is there a hopeful sign? How does one rationalize this? Is there a sense that perhaps this is the way it's going to be? Or is that only a small part of an overall plan going forward that has to be acknowledged without the risk? And it is a risk of, a fragile peace process to have this hanging there. It's very difficult to say, well, everything is, so much progress has been made, and, you know, the inward investment and all of that is and a new Belfast that we've talked extensively about, a new Derry. It's very difficult to even comprehend that all of this will be taken care of with the passage of time, particularly when you get four decades later. It's like a dark cloud hanging there without any sense that maybe something may in fact come out of the lack of understanding or reality that you can't have it both ways. You either have a peace process or you don't have a peace process, and you can't be selective in what needs to be resolved. And enough time has gone by to say, okay, let's now get back to the issues that were put on the back burner for a while. What's your view on that?
Well, you know, I think you come to the crux of the problem and this challenge to a genuine peace process. And it affects, of course, Dublin and Monaghan victims, but it affects many other people as well. And many people are saying truth equates to justice. If you could just tell us what happened, and that's the big question of the British government is their involvement with Dublin and Monaghan. But I think, in fact, we are close to dispelling or removing this dark cloud, because Richard Haass came up with the solution. He said, and we're not the only place in the world where there's been a violent conflict and afterwards they found ways to deal with the past. Unfortunately, we have parked the past, and that isn't sustainable, as you say. It's just not sustainable because it drags down, it cripples the peace process. And Richard Haass's proposal, I think the challenge for all of us, is to make sure that they become reality, that they are implemented, because he realized this is a cancer at the heart of the peace process, the past, and our failure to deal with it. The minute the British government is saying, we'll deal with the bit that the IRA was involved in, we don't care about the bit we were involved in. And of course, that's a recipe for disaster. So my feeling is that we need to go back to Richard Haas, they'll go back to those proposals. Whether or not he physically will be involved in it, I don't know, but go back to those proposals. We have the Irish government 100% signed up. We have the American government 100% signed up. We need to put the pressure, in my view, on the British government, and then after that on the unionist parties, and it can be polite and encouragement if you wish, but there is no other alternative. I don't see the unionist parties coming up with a compromise of any type of deal with the past. So, you know, logic dictates that if we really want to build a firm foundation for peace, we need to deal with the past. And we're very fortunate that Richard Haas spent 6 months here.
Mm-hmm.
He came up with proposals which are a compromise. Those proposals are tough proposals for Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Many elements of it are very tough for Republicans, but Gerry Adams said, no, we're going to make this compromise. And unfortunately, the unionists, just because of my view, because the British government was encouraging a no-show, if you wish, or a negative response, the unionists wouldn't really come to the table seriously. So in my view, the work's fairly clear. We know we need to deal with the past because it holds us back. We know that the Haas proposals are now a solution. We know that the British government is the key to get the unionists on board. So, in my view, I see all the building blocks, and now we need to put them in place.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough, but there's no alternative.
Yeah. And there's very little room for more compromise. If it looked towards the end of last year as if, you know, that the compromise was actually, it was real. It wasn't something that they were miles apart on. It seemed like when it came down to the nitty-gritty of just, signing on to, the arbitrator of this, the difficulties here, one would have to, assume that it became very lopsided and only got worse by virtue of this having to have a deadline. This had to be done, by the end of last year, which is only reasonable. I mean, it couldn't go on forever and a day. But can it be revisited in terms of...
I don't think that we're going to revisit the terms of the compromise, because a compromise is a compromise. But if the British government aren't happy with it, they need to tell us which bits. The Unionist Party, in a sort of a fit of pique, said there's 230 different objections they had to it now. They had 6 months to go through those, so there's a little bit of game playing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But in my view, Haas is the compromise. But if any party has an issue or... with one of the points, well, let's talk that through. But at the minute, the British government won't state. The British government won't state what are the issues that they have trouble with, and then therefore, so the unionist parties are hiding behind their skirts, if you wish. But for me, the path of progress is clear. Haas is the only game in town. We have some of the key parties. You know, when we got the Irish ceasefires and the peace process, America was key, Irish government key, nationalist parties. We're more than halfway there, and I think we're just going to double down. And so we have to sort this out for our children and our grandchildren, and we have to sort this out. So I certainly won't be taking no for an answer from either the British government or the unionists. And it's interesting, you said late last year, I thought there was a moment when the unionist parties were going to go for it.
Yeah.
So a little bit more courage, and we could be today talking about, okay, this is it. The past isn't easy, and there's a lot of grief there and heartache, but we're now going to find a way to try and deal with it together rather than let it divide us, that we're going to try and see if we can find a way as a unified people dealing with the past.
On a more positive note, I'm sure that it was refreshing, and that within your own term of office that last week, you were in Boston signing a twinning agreement between Belfast and Boston, and because that is very significant. That's just not a nominal kind of twinning that has very little to do with it. This has to basically, this is a new level of commitment between Boston and Belfast, which has to be welcome.
Well, and I'm thrilled. So, Adrian, to be honest, to be able to, and I need to be careful for our New York listeners, but to be able to have a relationship between Belfast and the capital of Irish America,
right?
And certainly in terms of cities, I think that Boston can claim that with a special love for New York, of course, and the Irish American community of New York. But Boston, I think, can rightly say it's the Irish American capital. No prize greater, in my view, of any city in Ireland wishing to twin with the U.S., the city in the U.S., no prize greater than Boston. And also, it's the perfect riposte to those who want to hold up the peace, because this great mayor of Boston, Mayor Marty Walsh,
yeah,
a man who's totally committed to the peace process, and he sees this not only as a relationship between universities, between businesses, between our faith communities, because that's part of it as well, but he sees it as a way of bolstering the peace process. And you're right, with the, I flew out Sunday, flew back Monday, but the ceremony was, I thought, very meaningful. Our friends in the Irish American Partnership hosted it, and we are now going to drive this forward. You're going to see a decade, hopefully, of partnership, relationship between Boston and Belfast, which is going to boost both cities, create jobs in both cities, create opportunities. And I'd love to see a day when people in Boston say, we're going to Ireland. Well, we're starting in our sister city.
Mm-hmm.
What a great sports city Boston is, but Belfast is a great sports city, and it'll be great to have sport exchanges between our teams and so on. Music city, Belfast is a music city and so on. So potential's endless. I was really delighted that I could be involved in it. I respect this mayor greatly, Mayor Walsh.
Yes.
And I had the support of the council, the full support of Belfast City Council to do this. So it's the first sister city agreement Boston signed since 2001. The first time Belfast has signed a sister city agreement with a U.S. city since 1984. So time to refresh and look again at the potential and possibilities. And I think it's good news for both cities.
Now let's move on to your next gig in New York. New York, New Belfast. This is year number 5. That's May 29th and 30th at indeed a very prestigious university and smack in the middle of New York City at Lincoln Center, and of course that's Fordham University. Tell us about the last four years and what that has meant for Belfast.
Well, New York certainly is probably the world's capital, and for Belfast to have a special period, a two-day conference every year where we are treated royally, if you wish, in the great city of New York, where we're allowed to bring over the best and the brightest from New York to discuss how they can partner similar organizations in New York, how we can grow together, how we can particularly form relationships with Irish America, so that really Belfast and New York and the Irish American community in New York are joined at the hip. And over the last 4 years, we have brought, I think, the cream of Belfast from both communities. The DUP minister, Sammy Wilson, was there. Was one of our guest speakers, and was very generous, and I thought excellent presentation. We have had the business community, our cultural leaders, our community leaders, and also then they've got to meet and know Irish America. So we've had we have the American Ireland Fund. We always have great presentations of Tourism Ireland, presence from Tourism
Ireland. Right, which again is a big part of it.
Absolutely.
And again, you mentioned universities. That is also a great place to begin relationships and to continue to build on those relationships, because we are talking about people who are entering a new phase of life, who will be carrying on the traditions as set forth during these New York, New Belfast conferences as well.
and you know, how privileged we are to have Fordham four square behind us, the wonderful presence of Fordham Father McShane,
mm-hmm.
rolling out the red carpet saying, this is your headquarters in New York. You know, like, that's a really privileged position to be in. We always pay homage to the great history and heritage of Fordham, which, of course, is linked to Belfast, because Joseph Campbell from Belfast established the Irish Department of Fordham in 1928. But we also look to the future, and our opening night is always focused on culture. We're bringing over some of our great performers, and one special treat this year is we're bringing over 64 members of the Belfast Community Gospel Choir.
Wow.
When I say we're bringing musicians from music from Belfast, I don't think people thought we'd bring music with the Belfast Community Gospel Choir. And out of this, you know, they really are a wonderful group of performers. They're of all religions and none. People shouldn't think that the gospel choir is going to be a church session, but of course they sing spirituals. And
yes.
One of their great treats is they're going to sing in Harlem on the Sunday after conference. And you know,
mm-hmm.
we want to really surprise and inspire people about Belfast, build this golden bridge to New York, to bring over performers, business leaders,
right.
and also our community leaders. You know, we'll have some great leaders from East Belfast, from the heart of Unionist Belfast,
mm-hmm.
telling New York what they're doing to transform lives and build the city. And
right.
From that, people then carry on and build their own partnerships, and it has enriched certainly Belfast, and I like to think it has also enriched the Irish American community of New York.
Right, but it is within the realm of networking. It has proven to be very successful. It's there's a lot of wheeling and dealing that actually takes place during those conferences. A lot of people are just meeting each other, perhaps might be aware of one another, but it is centered on a continuing relationship. It's not just a weekend to basically sit around and make new friends. There is a good track record of actually getting why this is taking place in the first place, and that is to getting a successful new networking opportunity.
Well, absolutely, and you know that in business and all aspects of life, networks are, but you know, probably the most important currency. And we'll be bringing to New York some of the greatest entrepreneurs from Belfast. Many of them employ people in America as well. And we'll also be celebrating the fact that Belfast is home to the New York Stock Exchange, the Citigroup, both headquartered in New York, and a new company called ShopKeep, which is just invested, a New York company invested in Belfast recently. We're also bringing out the Minister for Justice, the Alliance Party Minister for Justice,
right.
David Ford, is going to come out. And it was interesting to me that he wanted to go. He took up the invite. He had a free program, including meeting the police in New York when he's out. But, you know, the fact that we present a united face, but also we're there to do business. And we're there to, well, that business is building cultural links, or building business links, commercial links, but we're there to do business, we're there to work hard, and also to show off, really, I suppose, the very best of the great city of Belfast. And it's something I look forward to every year. I'm thrilled that we're bringing out some of our greatest leaders, and their message will be a positive message. Their message will be a positive message about the changes that Belfast is undergoing, this remarkable journey of peace on which we're set.
And also, of course, it speaks very highly of your annual New York, New Belfast conference to have so many sponsors and very significant sponsors, you know.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, led by KPMG, and that's always,
right.
I think, a brand of distinction that the conference has had. And KPMG in Ireland and in the U.S. has been behind the conference from the start are with Belfast man, as it turned out, John Kelly, who's very senior in KPMG in New York, has been doing great work to lead that. And, you know, the Sport of Tourism Ireland, Beth DNI, our friends in the Northern Bureau, all that has been positive because it means that they see merit in it and they see it as an event which they wish to attend and to bring people to. Because I think they know that our message is one of change. It's a positive message. And it's also saying that we have something to offer. We have an exciting proposition from Belfast, and I think that the message is being received loud and clear, and that's why we've had probably the most successful year for investment ever in the city of Belfast just passed. And when we have visitors here, when they see the images from the city, I think they're heartened and cheered. This is the result of Irish Americans work for peace, that we are now sitting in a situation where the last 4 weeks, 802,000 new jobs announced for Belfast, technology jobs.
That's an incredible, you can't even, you know, fluff over that. That is a huge, you know, number of jobs, and that has been the pattern. You know, it's
today I visited a company, a global legal company called Allen Minogue, 400 employees in Belfast, very well paid, experts in law, technology, and I mean this was unimaginable, and it's the fruits of the peace. And that we need to continue to mine those. We need to do better. But I'm convinced we're on the right path, and no one is going to divert us from that path in the time ahead.
The venue for New York, New Belfast, is Fordham University at Lincoln Center. Again, this is the New York, New Belfast conference. It's taking place on the 29th and the 30th. And can you give us a website? Can you direct us to a website, or how does
absolutely. The website is Iceling Events, Iceling, A-I-S-L-I-N-G, the Irish word for dream, of course, Iceling-Events.com, and under that, Iceling-Events.com, and under that is the entire itinerary agenda. I think we have something like 55 different companies taking part. We have a wonderful session for young entrepreneurs in Belfast pitching, which our English is supporting, about their company. And we're quite peripatetic because we will also, we're very grateful to the ambassador of Ireland in New York, Noel Kilkenny, and Nora Kilkenny, who will host us in their residence at the finale. We'll also
right.
go down to Ground Zero to meet with Belfast artist Marcus.
And as we know, of course, he'd be doing that while he's packing his bags. A big loss to New York, but it will be a great... both of them. We can't, speak of Consul General Ambassador Noel Kilkenny without giving equal credit to his wife. We got two for the price of one. I hope we're as lucky as we go forward. But they're moving on to Greece as their next assignment for the next 4 years, and we wish them, of course, all the luck in the world. The website, friends, is Aisling, A-I-S-L-I-N-G hyphen events.com. My guest, the Lord Mayor of Belfast, the 58th Lord Mayor of Belfast, and as usual, we are delighted to have you. I congratulate you on the very successful year, and we will look forward to seeing you on the 29th and 30th.
Well, look, can I thank the Irish Radio Network for supporting yourself and Anya over the year, over my year in office? It's been great to, one of the thrills was being able to host so many people or have them visit me in the parlor, and you were an early visitor, and as you know, to really understand the change, you have to visit. So all your listeners are on an open invite to Belfast, and they need to come and see the change, which they helped create, because we wouldn't have the change without Irish America. And I wish you well, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak, and I'm looking forward to visiting New York. It'll be my last week in office, but it's a great way to go out, as it were, with a visit to the great city of New York.
Again, Lord Mayor Martin O'Meara, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you on the 29th and 30th in New York. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.